Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal, joined by longtime football and basketball beat reporter Jim Paulzine. And I got an interesting week here. It's kind of quiet on the football side, but it's a huge week for the basketball team. We're recording this on Wednesday morning after a tough loss out at Michigan for the basketball team, one of the worst losses in the Guard era. Jim's actually still hanging out in Michigan, going to spend the week on the road like the basketball team is. So, Jim, what's it like out there? Are people mad about Jim Harbaugh?
You know, I haven't heard any Jim Harbaugh talk. It's weird because I'm just staying right at the airport, and so I don't see anybody. I just stand there. Went and worked out yesterday. Other than going to the game yesterday, I tooled around Dick's in Ann Arbor for a little bit, but that's about it. I've had zero human interaction, basically.
Well, that's probably not a bad way to take it this time of year and whatever that's going on. So, give you guys a quick rundown of the show here. We're going to recap that Michigan game. Obviously a tough one for the basketball team, but kind of looking forward to what the rest of this week looks like and what that game kind of says about where this team's at right now. I'm going to talk about this the basketball team's offense, because right now it's not looking great. Outside of Demetric Trice, who's playing really well outside of last night, I would say. Or I guess he had a pretty good night. But either way, the offense just isn't where I think – everyone knows it can get to and where the potential is for this team. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about this extended road trip that they're on. They're staying on the road all week, heading out to Rutgers to play this weekend as well. And then we're going to wrap up a little bit of football. Pretty slow right now, news-wise, but the thing that's really interesting to me is just the recruiting cycle for the 2022 class. Obviously, the excitement's still there right now for the 2021 class, but 2022, we'll get into it, but they're a little bit behind, the Badgers are, especially here in the Big Ten. So we'll get into all of that, and then some more stuff, stories for you guys to look out for on Madison.com, other things like that right after this. All right, Jim, let's just break it down here. Obviously, pretty ugly game last night. Badgers go to Michigan, and what the score end up being, 77-54, something like that, right around there. It was basically a 30-point game most of the second half. I guess just, and you got down our show notes here, just one of the low points of the Guard era. I mean, one of the hallmarks, I think, of Bo Ryan, Greg Guard, Wisconsin program is even when you beat them, it's going to be a slugfest and you got to grind it out, really. That was not the case last night. There was a long stretch and, it's kind of the swung the game the last 7 minutes of the first half, and then really the opening 15 minutes of the second, the Badgers really couldn't get anything going. Just from the sideline seat, what was some of the bigger issues that you saw?
Yeah, I handed you a little assignment as the game was spinning out of control. I knew it was, at that point, I really thought it was going to be the most lopsided defeat of the Guard era. I figured it would go even bigger than that, and I asked you to look through some records to see when their largest defeat was over the years. They've had, even under Bo, they had games where they got beat handily. But, I don't remember the last time they've been trailing by 40 points. You probably have to go back, pre-2000 at least, because it just doesn't happen very often, this program. And it was just kind of surreal to watch it happen in real time. And then I went over and watched this morning again. I got through most of the game. It's just, everything that could go wrong did. I mean, first of all, you got to credit Michigan. I wasn't sure what to make of Michigan. Knew they were a good team, but they hadn't, they hadn't played a lot of tough teams. They're legit. That's a team that could be a Final Four contender. I think that's the clear Big Ten front runner right now, because they do it on both ends. I mean, Iowa's got a really good offense, but Michigan can really play defense and play offense. And they've got NBA guys in that lineup. From a talent standpoint, everything's gelling. So, I don't want to downplay Michigan, but Wisconsin did a lot of things wrong. I mean, their shot selection was poor. They turned the ball over. Their defense was atrocious. A lot of things spun out of control. And that was maybe the most disappointing part, is that If your shots aren't falling, you still need to play tough defense. You got to stay in the game. If you're struggling defensively, you got to make shots to stay in the game. You know, one of those things has to work. And I didn't see a lot of fight from Wisconsin during that stretch over the first and second half. I mean, the run was, you know, there's various ways you can look at the run. The one I used is 36-3, which is just amazing. I mean, 36-3 for a team that's, you know, at least for now, ranked in the top 10. It's just, you just don't see it very often. So it was really a sad display of basketball from this team.
Yeah, and to your point about the run, I had it at 43-6 when you extended a little bit after the Badgers made a three in the second half. The thing that I think you summed up really well there, like usually one part of when you're playing well, when you're not playing well, one side of the floor has got to be, you know, pick up the other side, right? If you're not making shots, got to play defense and vice versa. The thing that really concerned me the most was they were letting up so many layups and so many easy baskets. And it wasn't Hunter Dickinson being 7-1 being awesome. It was guys cutting, guys not rotating well, guys not communicating on defense. It was some sloppy stuff on defense that you just don't see from this team very often.
Yeah, and Greg Gard warned a little bit about that, is that, you know, there was a lot of focus on Hunter Dickinson. You know, I was asking questions about Hunter Dickinson. The danger there is if you focus too much attention on Hunter Dickinson, they have so many other ways to beat you. You know, Franz Wagner is an NBA player. Isaiah Livers, I think, is going to have a chance to play in the NBA. Eli Brooks barely gets any attention, and, you know, he's kind of viewed as a defensive guy, but he knocked down some shots. And then, you know, I watched the first, I don't know, 10 minutes of that game, and I'm like, well, this Michigan team's good, but I think the one thing I have a question about is their point guard play. And then Mike Smith just went off from there. I mean, he had 16 points and 6 assists, and they're really a complete team. They've got a former starter from the ACC coming off the bench. He's not even, you know, he can't even find a spot in the starting lineup. So yeah, they're complete. And that's, I mean, I think we look at that team and say Final Four potential. I think it makes us look a little bit at Wisconsin and realize that there's, you know, a ceiling with this team. Cause when they go up against really athletic teams and really good teams, they just don't match up well.
Yeah. And you mentioned the turning the ball over and some other things, and watching that game, I was really, you know, I guess taken back by, outside of Metric Trice and, I mean, Davison at times, there is not a lot of guys on the Badgers offensively that I trust with the ball in their hands to make something happen off the dribble. And we saw it last night. I mean, I think Trevor Anderson got picked for an easy layup. Who was Johnny Davis also? Somebody else on the wing did too. And I know Tyler Wall was having a tough time handling the ball pressure they're putting on him as well. So I think that's something to maybe keep our eye on as a concern going forward, is that, you know, if there's times where Trice gets in foul trouble or Davison can't be out there or whatever ends up being, the lack of ball handlers, you know, against some of the lesser athletic teams, there's teams that can't pressure you like Michigan does. It's not going to show up as much, but, you know, that top tier in college basketball right now, you know, Michigan's up there, Gonzaga, Baylor, those type of teams. Like, that's what you're going to see possession after possession. And right now it doesn't seem like Wisconsin's got enough options to handle the ball against that type of pressure.
Yeah, I agree. And there are ways around that. I mean, if teams are going to overplay you and jump passing lanes, then, you know, you work back cuts and backdoor plays and stuff like that. They never got to that last night, and in part because they couldn't, you know, dribble handoffs were getting poked away, and worse yet, you know, turnovers are one thing, but live ball turnovers are even worse. And then when they lead to points on the other end, and there was just too many breakouts. I mean, Michigan was hard enough to stop in the half court.
Yeah.
Giving them free layups, and that during that stretch, that's one thing that allowed the game to get out of hand.
Yeah, no doubt. And you mentioned the ceiling a little bit ago, and we've got it on our show notes here, and I think it's a good question, but like, that's a type of loss where it's kind of, you take a step back. It's like, really, what are the Badgers this year? What's a fair expectation for where this team can go? Because when you look at the experience and the guys on the roster and everything that you know that they can do, you kind of feel like there's a deep NCAA tournament run in this team and in this roster. But then you look at what happened last night, and it's like, well, that's the top tier right there, and they weren't even close. You know, they got run out of the gym by it. So, I mean, like, from your perspective, does it make you think, or think differently or think less of where this team might be able to end up?
Yeah, and I'm not saying they can't recover from this because, you know, like last year I felt like, you know, I remember writing at one point that it might have been it wasn't the Michigan game. At some point they played a game where it was kind of like a test, right? Are they among the Big Ten elite? They lost the game, and I didn't outright bury them in my game story, but basically, you know, pointed out that this wasn't a team that was a Big Ten contender. Well, what'd they do? They went out and won 8 straight games and want to share the Big Ten. So I'm always, you know, a little bit leery about burying a team on January 13th or 12th or whatever, you know. But I will say, even before last night, my concerns with this team, basically from the Maryland game, were how do they match up with teams that are really athletic? If you look at Wisconsin, what I thought Wisconsin could be, I thought it could be a really good shooting team that took care of the ball and played really hard, really tough defense. But now I'm starting to have questions about them defensively. You know, they've had some really, really bad stretches. I mean, if you look at the overall numbers, it's still a pretty good statistical defense, but there's been too many ugly stretches where teams have gotten to the rim and scored at will that it just leaves me questioning them. And they still are a team that takes care of the ball. They're a team that shoots the ball pretty well. Last night, you know, was certainly not the case. But I think what I look at this team as, it's a team that's got to have everybody playing well and everything going right for them to be even have a chance against elite teams. And that's just hard to do. That's hard. You know, we talked about margin for error with the football team. And then that's kind of what I look at this basketball team is like, there's just such a thin margin for error and they need everybody clicking. And right now, I mean, besides Demetri Trice, who's playing well, right? I mean, Michael Potter offensively is playing okay. But, you know, can you trust him defensively? And then you look across the board, Davison Ford, they're not playing well. Reavers is not playing well. Johnny Davis, you know, like Greg Gard pointed out after the game, he looked like a freshman last night for the first time. I just named four guys that, you know, aren't playing well. And you can't compete with really good teams like that. So that's something that's, you know, they've got to pull out of this. They need to get back all on the same page. And because clearly they're not at this point.
Yeah, and that's a really good point about the lineup because – like you said, outside of Trice and Potter just on offense, it just nobody's really playing up to what you expect out of them. And I feel like Aline Ford's going to end up, if he doesn't turn around the second half of the year, going to be end up being one of those like big what-if guys because the natural ability and the talents there, not that I'm around it all that much, but seems like he's a hard worker and a good dude. Like it just doesn't seem to all come together for him. And that's the type of guy that you would think when you go against a really athletic team that – be able to match up for you on defense and maybe add something to the offense that challenges a team like that. But it just doesn't seem to all come together for a guy like Aline.
Yeah. The thing he struggled with in his career is consistency. We've seen it in flashes, but it's, you know, just, he hasn't put it together. I mean, like I just had this stat not too long ago, but he was in double figures, 5 straight games, for the first time in his career. And then that streak ended, he had 14 against Minnesota. He played really well that night. But since that point, he's 2 of 7 overall. He's 2 of 7 on 2-pointers and has 6 and 8 points and just hasn't looked good. So, you know, they need a higher level from him. I mean, Davison, I think is even in a bigger funk right now. He's one of those guys that has getting to the basket, right? We have to talk about guys that can get to the basket. Well, he's getting to the basket, but nothing's happening when he gets there. It's either getting sent out of bounds or he's just not making shots. So, you know, I feel like I've always felt like he's kind of their spiritual energy guy. And if he's not playing well, it's hard for them to overcome. And clearly he's not playing well right now.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that really like kind of stunned me last night was even the times that the Badgers got to the rim and, you know, made a good cut or like made a good move on the ball, they just got swatted, you know, like, and that, maybe that's just a credit to how hard Michigan was playing and crashing down when guys got inside, but it was just like Michigan was not going to allow them to get to the rim and score. And the Badgers really just not have an answer for that.
Yeah. They're getting too many shots blocked. I checked this morning. I thought maybe it was worse than it was. I think right now they're about 10% of their shots are getting blocked, which, you know, it's not an alarming figure. It's too high for this program because this program's always been, you know, shot fakes and ball fakes. And playing off 2 feet, and they preach those values. I just, too many times this season they go in there and shots get swatted away. And, you know, that's what happens then, is it kind of leads you to not want to go in the lane, and you gotta keep attacking, and you gotta try to get to the free throw line. And there just wasn't enough of that. I will say the refs let these teams play last night, and that's not a complaint. I mean, it was both ways. I didn't think it was a one-sided thing, but I don't know if that necessarily is a good thing for Wisconsin. You know, if they let both teams be aggressive. And Greg Gard called out his team after the game for not being aggressive enough. They had 2 fouls at the half, and he thought that was a terrible number. He wanted more. You know, he just didn't think they were being physical enough. So, again, it's you know, as much as they're not going to want to go back and watch this film, there's going to be a lot of things to learn from it.
Yeah, for sure. And that was funny that you mentioned the fouls thing, because I remember it started getting away from a little bit in that run where they go scoreless. What was it, like the last 6.5 minutes, 7 minutes of the first half? And I think Dave or Reavers got fouled or something like that, on the possession. He didn't, you know, wasn't shooting or anything like that. And I was thinking, like, oh, okay, are they close to the bonus? It's like, oh no, Michigan's got 3 fouls. Like, it's not even close. Like, they're not gonna be able to get back in this game at the free throw line either. So that was just tough. I wanted to ask about Reavers, because you had a really good story about him and struggling in the post. And obviously, he's always been a guy that's, as a big man, his real strength was being able to draw guys away and beat them with quickness and do things like that. He wasn't always, you know, a traditional back you down, score at the rim guy. But they need him to do something else or to step up production somewhere, because what they're getting out of him right now, it's so streaky. It's a couple of possessions where he's awesome and the guy that you expect, and then it's like he's not on the floor. I'm sure he knows it. I mean, he talked about it a little bit in your story from a couple weeks ago, but like when he's playing well, it opens up so much for everybody else. So I got to imagine that in this little bit of time off they have this week, that their focus has got to be, let's kickstart one of these guys and see what happens for the rest of them. To me, that'd be Nate Reavers.
Yeah. And I thought for a minute there, he was getting unleashed a little bit early last night. I mean, he scored twice in a row to pull them within 26 to 23. I mean, that was their last points of the first half. I think it was 69 left or something like that. I'm like, okay, you know, here goes his little run where he gets going, and they needed it because Potter was on the bench. And then, you know, if you look at the possessions after that, he had chances. You know, if you look at the very next possession, he missed an open 3-pointer that could have tied it. Then he had a travel. He missed a contested shot in the paint later on that looked awful. He missed another open 3. So he was getting chances. He was getting looks and just wasn't converting. And, you know, not that he was alone in that regard, but you're right. They, you know, this was a guy that people voted for him for first team All Big Ten preseason this year, because they thought, all right, he had a good season last year. Is there another jump to make? And he just hasn't made that jump. He had one nice move in the first half where he got Dickinson up in the air and finished. It was, you know, I'm like, wow, why don't we see that more often? We just haven't seen it enough. And that's the frustrating part, is you've got a 6'11 guy and a 6'10 guy, seniors, you know, old guys, and Wisconsin's just not getting enough from them close to the rim. And that's been the frustrating part.
Yeah. Those like Reavers and Potter, you expect like when stuff's breaking down, like go get us an easy basket, like kind of stem the tide here. And it's just not happening. And it all goes together, because, you know, obviously it's easier for them to do that if the threes are going down and if guys are able to cut and stuff like that. So, you know, basketball, everything kind of ties back into each other when you're struggling. But just to put a cap on this overall, like, I think that Michigan has really established themselves in the last week or so as like they're a top five level team, and they're a team that's really established now that they're the favorite in the Big Ten, them and, you know, maybe Iowa. I mean, that game might be 110-100 when they play or something, but is this just one of those, like, okay, caught a team at the wrong time. They're really hot on the road. We're not playing our best. Like, do you think this is something they can bounce back from, or do you think this is one of those, like, this exposed some really big issues and it's going to be hard to recover from going forward?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, like, the good and bad thing is you play right away on Friday again against a Rutgers team that's, you know, notoriously brings it. They just bring it. Yeah. They bring energy. They bring physical play. That was one of the games that Greg Gard was most angry at his team afterward last year was the game at the rack. They just pushed Wisconsin around. And so, you know, Wisconsin's got to be ready. And I said at the beginning of the week, if they can get a split out of this week, I thought that was a decent thing. And that kind of leaves you in good shape in the Big Ten race. Now, I guess you have to kind of break it down even further. The fact that they were trailing in 40 points in one of those games, again, kind of makes you change the way you view things. And I do think Michigan and Iowa kind of have established themselves as the front runners. I just think Wisconsin's got to figure itself out right now. They got to find out who they are and get back to playing the way they could. They've shown it in flashes. They just haven't shown it consistently enough. And, you know, can they bounce back Friday? And then they get some time off, some practice. I think this team needs some practice and kind of work on some things. So if you get a win Friday, I think that's big. And then you can kind of regroup heading in the second half of the Big Ten season.
Sure. And if you guys haven't, make sure you go on Madison.com and check out Jim's story going into the Michigan game. I think it went online Tuesday morning or maybe Monday night about the lineups that are playing, and really good analysis of the two big man lineup when you've got Potter and Reavers out there, what Johnny Davis is doing when he goes into the game, you know, statistically. Really good stuff there. So make sure you go on Madison.com and check it out there. But one last thing on the basketball, or a couple actually more things on basketball, but this team's staying on the road, much like Jim Polzin. He's doing this Zoom from a hotel room right now, but they're staying on the road between these two games because it doesn't make a ton of sense to fly back from Michigan and then fly out to New Jersey 24 hours later. So I get that, but what do you think, what kind of effect can that have? Because you said this team needs some practice. I don't know, they probably got something set up where they can get some work in, but what is this week going to look like for them?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't talked to anybody about specifics. I will point to this example, though. Maryland did this. Maryland played at Purdue on Christmas night, I believe, and lost a really tough game and then went straight from there to Madison and spent a couple days without going home. And then Maryland came out and played really well. And Mark Turgeon at the time said, you know, he was pissed at the Big Ten for doing this to them. But he ended up thinking it was a good thing because it gave him a chance to bond. It gave him a chance to spend time in meetings. And so he ended up thinking it'd be a good thing. So if you're Wisconsin, if you're Greg Gard, you hope the same thing happens. It can be a chance to kind of just get away, be your group of 15 or 20 people and just kind of refocus on what you need to do. We'll see. Again, it's easier said than done because there's an opponent that's good and desperate on Friday in Rutgers. They need a win just as bad as Wisconsin does. So I'm anxious to see kind of how this plays out.
Yeah. And it's funny because we heard about it throughout the football season too, is that there's not that extra time that you're used to in a season, like maybe after a film session or after a practice where guys are all together in the training room or, you know, whatever ends up being where that's really those, you know, hanging out as teammate times because they're trying to separate everybody and do it smart with COVID and everything like that. And you respect it, but this is one of those rare chances, I think, this year that they're going to have to really just be together, feel maybe a little bit more normal because it's going to be like there's a longer road trip for them that they've been on in years past. So it's not going to be as, you know, kind of crazy and different that they've been experiencing since they got back on campus. So maybe this is a point too. And I thought it was interesting because you go back, not the Michigan game, but the one before that, the teammates calling Nate Reavers out. You know, this is a senior laden team and guys that all know each other very well and can feel comfortable doing that. But when you've got that going on, you've got some of your stars struggling. Maybe this is one of those times where everybody kind of, you know, vents and gets all that stuff out and they can kind of move forward from there.
Yeah. I mean, it could be a turning point. I'm anxious to see. I've had a couple people reach out and say, you know, this team, it looks like something wrong, it looks broken, it looks like there's internal stuff. And I don't know, I mean, that's pure speculation to me. I don't know that's the case. You know, I was just talking to somebody like 2 or 3 weeks ago and he was raving about how much they get along, how all they can do is spend time with each other because you know, they're kind of in their own little bubble. They're not allowed to see family and friends, but they've just kind of chosen to keep things safe, to be together more often. And he said, well, that's a good thing, you know, because we all do get along. And so I don't know that there's any inner friction or not. I mean, it's just, I think when a team loses, you start kind of picking at it and saying what's wrong with it. I just think they need to play better. Like I said before, they need some of their best players to play better. It's pretty simple. Right. Brad Davison and Aleem Ford and Nate Reavers play up to their capabilities. This is a pretty good team. So they need that, and they need it soon.
Yeah. One, to just pull on that thread a little bit about maybe something's wrong. We've seen the last few games, Micah Potter was a little bit of a blow up against Indiana, but I didn't think it was very bad on the Michigan side. But Dan Dockett, who was calling the game on ESPN, kind of called it out about Nate or Micah Potter needs to, you know, not talk as much on the bench and not question stuff so much. So I don't really know exactly what he was angling at there. I didn't think it was that bad, but we saw Greg Gard bench Potter for a while against Indiana, and then didn't happen yesterday. But just what have you seen from being at these games and being around or talking to this team as much as you have, in the sense of like what's going on with Potter on the sideline?
Yeah, we asked Potter about it the other day. He downplayed it. And Orlando Tucker was on Zach Halpern and Jesse Temple's podcast the other day, and they asked him about it, and he downplayed it too. Essentially, you know, they're saying Potter's an emotional guy. He was mad, you know, he was mad because of how the game was playing out. And of course, anybody that gets benched isn't going to be happy about it. But I think the important distinction is Greg Gard benched Micah Potter because of his defense, not because of the outburst. And he left him on the bench because he wanted the best defensive line up there, not because of anything that happened. I'm not even sure Greg Gard knew about it at the time, the exchange between Potter and Tucker. So I don't know. I thought it was a little bit overplayed. Now, the thing that gives me a little bit of pause with Dockett talking about it so much is that, as Dockett mentioned during the broadcast, he had talked to Greg Gard twice leading up to that game last night. So, you know, it makes me wonder, did Gard say something and Dockett got attached to it or whatever? I don't know. I think it's probably much ado about nothing. I'm not overly concerned about it. I do think Potter's a very emotional guy. And, you know, blow ups is the wrong word, but I do think he gets angry, gets over it, plays hard, and that's fine. And I don't think it's anything major.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, that might not be the worst thing in the world for this team to have somebody that's a little more fiery, because I feel like there's a lot of laid back. Like, obviously, they're all very competitive and, you know, top level guys, but just sometimes they're just a little bit too reserved and a little bit too calm when things are going well or poorly, in my opinion. Just sometimes you need a little bit of a spark plug. And especially when Davison isn't playing well, even if, you know, things aren't going well, if things are going well for the team, he's not playing well, it's tough for him to be that spark and be that vocal guy. Potter, as we mentioned, one of the guys that's, you know, playing pretty well offensively, having a little bit of a fire is not a bad thing, I don't think, as long as it's not spilling over.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. I mean, you look at across the board with this team, Trice, pretty quiet guy. Aleem Ford, pretty quiet guy. Reavers, you know, somewhat quiet guy. You know, like there's a lot of nice guys. I think I wrote this last year that there's a lot of nice guys in this group. And do you need a little bit of nastiness to come out every once in a while? I think that's a great point. And the one thing a lot of people have been harping on my Twitter timeline is they want to see more energy from the bench. And I actually, being there in person last night, I thought the bench was into it. It's hard to see because, you know, the TV cameras are showing Michigan's bench after made baskets, right? And those guys
are going crazy. Crazy, right?
Wisconsin, most of Wisconsin's reserves were seated on the baseline. So they're not in camera view, but I thought they were into the game. I do think that there's not a lot of rah-rah guys on this roster. If you look at the guys that aren't playing, they're all freshmen, basically, quiet freshmen. And so maybe there's something to that, that the bench needs to come with more energy. I just don't know if that's in their DNA. I really don't. There's not a lot of Aaron Mache's. You know, I keep thinking back to Aaron Mache, who was a guy that, you know, was very vocal on the bench, and Matt Ferris, those guys. I just don't see that on this team. And you know, if you need, here's my other thing. If you're on this court and you need that from your bench, something's wrong. I mean, you should be able to create your own energy and your own spark. So I think to point fingers at the bench is, you know, I think that's just a little off.
Yeah, that's fair. One last thing on basketball. I got to respect Jordan Davis for making sure that he didn't get, you know, the trillion he gets in that game in the last minute, goes and gets the layup, make sure he gets in the box score. That was some impressive stuff right there. Oh, you got to respect dudes doing that.
Yeah, it was funny. I was kind of busy writing, so I looked up. I didn't even know that he had checked into the game. So I'm like, oh, yeah, good to see him get some run.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Jim, let's jump into some football here. I just have one thing I want to talk to you about because I think it's interesting. You know, last year, I mentioned off the top of the show, pretty slow right now football news-wise. The defensive line coach position is posted, so it's going to be a couple of weeks while that's up and the interviews happen and everything like that. One name that Jim and I were texting about, just hadn't talked about it before, but Terrence Jameson, former UW lineman, was defensive line coach at Purdue, ends up getting hired as a D-line coach under Brett Bielema at Illinois now. So that was, I think, one potential name that was now off the list for the Badgers. So we'll see what ends up happening there. It'll be a couple of weeks, like I said. But I think the interesting thing right now is the excitement's there for the 2021 class, and it's going to be, you know, potentially one of those, you know, turning point classes where maybe Wisconsin starts pushing themselves into that every year. They're in the top 15, top 20. But last year at this time, there were 8 guys committed to that class. And right now for the 2022 class, Badgers don't have anybody committed. So caveat to that, Braylon Allen from Fond du Lac was supposed to be in the 2022 class and committed earlier, then reclassified. So, you know, he would be a cornerstone guy, one of the in-state 4-star products that, you know, you would build around and you would kind of, you know, base everything around there. If you're having this discussion, he was still there, but he reclassifies. So right now you're sitting at nobody in the 2022 class. And Wisconsin is one of, I am going through it all yesterday, they're one of 5 Big Ten teams to not have a recruit committed yet to this class. And when you look at some of the other guys or other teams that you think going forward are going to be, you know, top level of the Big Ten, you're looking at the Ohio States, the Penn States, they've got 10 and 8 respectively. So Ohio State, who was just in the national championship game, have 10 guys already committed to 2022. And then Penn State, trying to rebuild after a bad year, has 8, including one of the 4-star guys here in Wisconsin, Jerry Cross. So I'm a little – it's hard to say I'm concerned because it's like all the challenges, everything as weird as it's been, digital recruiting and doing everything on Zoom, all stuff like that, you haven't – you're going off sophomore tape for these guys. A lot of them didn't play their junior years. So that's really tough for a college coach to say, hey, this guy was good at 15, 16. Let's offer him a scholarship without knowing how he's developed and seeing him do more. But at the same time, having nobody is a little strange to me. What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's I think you're right. The one thing I'll add to the point you made is that not only are you having a more difficult time evaluating these guys, you're having a more difficult time getting to know them. And mm-hmm. I think for this program, it's always been, they want to find the right fit and, you know, they want to find, you know, they always, their mantra is smart, tough, dependable. And it's hard to always find that just by watching film. You want a chance to get to meet them, get to meet their family, go around and they do a pretty exhaustive approach to recruiting. You know, they talk to guidance counselors, teachers, and I think that's just harder to do if you can't get on the road, right? And so I wonder if that's playing a role into it, that they're being a little bit more selective and not taking, I guess, quote unquote risk at this point. I do think, you know, let's see how this plays out 3-4 months. But I think the big key here is you've got to be able to get kids on campus and get out and see them. And once those things get lifted, I think, you know, you might see more of a trickle in terms of this class. But yeah, to have 0 at this point is less than optimal for sure.
Yeah, and I think one of the things is you got to imagine there's 4 more 4-star or better prospects in the state right now, say Wisconsin. You've got to imagine they're the priorities, right? It's 3 linemen. Actually, it's 4 linemen. Oh, I had a different page. Yeah, it's 4 linemen here from Wisconsin that you've got to imagine are the priorities. And maybe once one of them commits, then a snowball starts to roll for him coming down a hill. But I wonder if being a little bit behind now is going to hurt them going forward. And I'm going to try to go through it and see like how many guys do they think they're going to need in this class. So maybe they're not as aggressive right now because they don't need to. But I think it would be a mistake if the Badgers are going to sit back and wait until the summertime when you know, there's an in-person ban on recruiting until April, right? And then we'll see if they re-up it. You know, there's no guarantee that's going to get lifted in April. So you don't know if you're going to have those summer camps that historically Wisconsin's done a lot of their offers at and gotten, you know, that hands-on experience with somebody. I think it would be a mistake if you're depending on those to happen, that ban to get lifted and then those camps to happen, given where we're at right now. And obviously it's tough to project 5-6 months down the road, but you're putting a lot of eggs in that basket if you're not going to be able to land some of these guys earlier on in that process and you're depending on those things to happen.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I would like to know what the target number is in terms of scholarships to give. And then how much, you know, the fact that these guys didn't lose a season of eligibility this year, how much does that play a role? You know, some of those younger guys who won't have it used against them. Does that give you a little flexibility on the back end with that 2022 class?
Yeah, it's a good question. And we've only seen so far two true seniors, Noah Burks and Kendrick Pryor, take advantage of that year to come back. Well, I'm sure there's going to be some more coming up in the next few weeks here that we'll see. But I don't think that the roster overload that at one time seemed like it might be a concern or a question about how they're going to fix it and how they're going to manage it all, I don't think that's going to be as prevalent as an issue. But it is weird to think like the amount of talent that they had, you know, recruiting is so much about momentum, right? Like it seems like once you get one really good class or one really good kid, then it kind of snowballs for you. To think that Wisconsin's not going to be able to follow up this, you know, historically good class for them with something close or even, you know, kind of approaching it, that's a little concerning because obviously the on-field product wasn't great this year and we've gone over all the challenges they had there. But to not be able to follow up what you did this year, you know, we'll see if they do or not, like how it all ends up shaking out. But I got to think that you've had this big success in recruiting in 2021. You've got to continue to strike while the iron's hot here in 2022. And if you don't, then that's a bad step back to take.
Yeah, I think this class is going to be such a good case study years down the road of how, you know, how it all came together. What was the success rate? You know, if you end up getting however many you end up getting, let's say they get 15 kids in this class, how many of them stick around? Because like I said before, you're knowing less about them coming in than ever, right? You just haven't had a chance to meet them and get to know them like you would. So do they stick around campus? You know, is this, the transfer rate is already out of control all across the board. What will it be in the 2022 class with such a bizarre cycle in terms of recruiting? That's, you know, if I'm still in this business 5 years from now, I'd love to take a look and see what, you know, what happened with this class.
Yeah, no doubt. And it is kind of interesting to see because, so there was all like the reports and I don't even know if I'm going to call them reports. I'm just going to call them rumors. There's rumors that Marquis Stepp, the transfer running back from USC was leaning toward Wisconsin. And then yesterday he tweets out that he's going to Nebraska. Now, Nebraska seems to do a much better job or maybe just was more aggressive in the transfer market than a lot of their Big Ten counterparts. So that's probably part of it, but it's just not a great sign that somehow Wisconsin loses out to Nebraska for a running back. I don't quite get that. Maybe because of the Dedrick Mills going in the NFL opens up probably the starting running back spot in Nebraska. Maybe that played into the decision. You know, talking out loud now, that's probably the biggest decision. No competition there really, but.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is, I mean, I'm sure they sold him on that, hey, you come here, you're going to get, you know, 20 plus carries a game. You go to Wisconsin and you're going to be competing with Jalen Berger for playing time, right? I mean, that's it for a guy who probably is using this as a springboard to what he believes is an NFL career. You know, for Wisconsin, that's a tough hurdle to overcome because I think, you know, Jalen Berger, the good news with it was that Jalen Berger established himself this season. The bad news is that, you know, it's now tougher to sell other tailbacks on coming here and getting an opportunity for, you know, a lot of carries.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Well, I just want to talk about that a little bit. And that's going to be a story that comes out, you know, sometime in the next few days. from me about the slower recruiting class. I'm talking to some of the guys here in the state for the 2022 class about what they're experiencing. And this, it's weird because you look at, you know, a lot of the Midwest states and, you know, the, some of the five-star guys that, that have been recruited or committed for a while, that, that hasn't really changed, but there's more undecided guys than there usually is by this time, because, you know, you're thinking January before, you know, the January of that same year of the December signing day, you know, you're already thinking 50 to 60% is committed. Obviously there's switches and, you know, decommitments and things like that, but, you know, it's definitely slower overall right now for the recruiting stuff across the board. But especially here at Wisconsin. So there'll be a story from that from me coming up in the next few days here. And obviously, you know, you just heard Jim staying on the road, got a lot of basketball stuff. What's something people can look forward to on Madison.com, Jim?
Well, I'm still kind of sorting through that. I think I'm going to run right about their offense and kind of the stuff I mentioned before about how they need, you know, the strength of this team for a long time this season was balance. And now it's become very top heavy in terms of their offensive distribution. And they just need everybody to kind of pick up the slack a little bit more if this offense is going to be more consistent.
Sure. I should have asked you this earlier in the show. It's, I only saw snippets of it, but was that one of the more angry or like kind of just maybe annoyed is not the right word, but just kind of downtrodden Greg Gard interviews you've experienced in the last, you know, 15, 20 years of covering this team?
Yeah, he didn't look, I wouldn't classify him as angry. I mean, shell-shocked, which I thought is kind of his look and his team, his players look through the game. I think they were shell-shocked, which I guess is makes sense if you get outscored 43-6 or 36-3 over a pretty significant portion of the game.
Right.
I just think they probably believed, you know, that this couldn't happen to them, and it did. So, you know, I think the thing that bothers me the most is that this team shouldn't have needed a wake-up call, right? The Maryland game should have been the wake-up call. Marquette should have been a wake-up call to some degree. This team's needing too many wake-up calls, and so maybe that's a sign of something bigger going on that they just, you know, they need to figure some stuff out.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. All right, so make sure you're on Madison.com checking all that stuff out. Have some, obviously, a lot of coverage from that Rutgers game on Friday. You can make sure you follow us on Twitter, Jim Polzine, WSJ for Jim, Seabart, WSJ for me. You know, well, thanks, by the way, thanks for listening to the podcast, because we had a couple of good numbers last few weeks. And obviously once we start getting even closer to the tournament, fingers crossed, you know, I keep throwing stuff in here at the end, sorry, but I'm amazed that college basketball has done as well as they have. They've had the issues. It seems like December was the roughest month, but last few weeks, like, I know the Big Ten's going through some things, but college basketball as a whole seems like it's doing better than I would have expected.
Yeah, I think I might have hit on this last week. The Christmas break was the real concern because teams were going home, letting their players go home. And so, you know, that opens the door for more of an infection spread. So I think if they can get through this, you know, this next week, you know, they'll probably be in good shape. The real concern, I think we might talk about this too, is Penn State's got four games to make up, and I'm curious how they're going to fit those in, one of those against Wisconsin. So I think devising a rescheduled set of games right now is the headache that the Big Ten is facing.
Gotcha. All right, no more throw-ins from me. All right, thanks. Thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast. We'll be back next week.